This week on a special episode of WebMD's Health Discovered podcast, we're taking a closer look at a common form of lung cancer that accounts for 85% of all cases.
When I first heard the words, "you have lung cancer," I was in shock.
It's a diagnosis that changes everything. So what does it really mean to advocate for yourself when you're living with non-small cell lung cancer? Listen to Health Discovered on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Introducing Home Care Plus, a new subscription service from Lowe's that helps make life easier by giving members a hand with home maintenance. Let Lowe's tackle the tasks you keep meaning to do, like electric dryer vent cleaning, replacing hard-to-reach light bulbs, and more. Subscribe to Home Care Plus for just $99 a year and consider your to-do list done. Members get more at Lowe's. Available in select zip codes only. Cancel anytime. Non-refundable fee. Product purchase required. Terms and service restrictions apply. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Astonishing Legends Network.
The views and opinions expressed by hosts and listeners on the Astonishing Dead Letter Office are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of Astonishing Legends Productions, the Astonishing Legends Network, or any affiliated entities or guests.
When something unexplainable happens to you, it can make you feel isolated or alone. But trust us, you're not. For over a decade, you've been sending your strange stories to Astonishing Legends. And now it's time for our fellow legenders to hear them too. Join us weekly in Blanket Fortiana as we dig through your intriguing messages to the Astonishing Dead Letter Office.
Tonight's episode, The Elephant Slides of Sofia.
Tonight we're headed to the heart of the Balkans, a place where ancient antiquity and mid-century modernism sit side by side, sometimes literally stacked on top of each other.
Well, I think most of us that have walked through a very old city have that feeling where you can feel the inhabitation that's been going on for maybe thousands of years in this case.
Yeah.
Weirdly, today I was thinking I would love to visit Quebec. Just because for North America and the Americas, it's a very old city, older than people here in the States kind of realize, and just to get that sense of gravitas. And so when we first read over the story, I loved how the author here described things because I got a real sense for the place.
Yeah.
The sense of the city. And again, it's not a bad heaviness. It's more of a gravitas of, you know, when you meet somebody who's like super smart or renowned, if you've ever got the privilege to, and just how they have an aura of years of experience and wisdom and this and that, and you kind of feel it. It's a key.
Oh, you flatter me.
Oh,
you don't have to. That's nice of you to say that on the air.
That's only after a few old fashions. I might feel that way, but then it's probably the booze talking. But in this case, though, yeah, there's something about the city here in that the atmosphere is palpable, let's say.
Yeah. So tonight we are talking about Sofia, Bulgaria. This is a capital city. It has incredible layered history. It's got ancient Thracian roots, Roman ruins, the old city of Serdica right under the streets, then the Ottoman period, and eventually the massive imposing concrete architecture of the Soviet era. Specifically tonight, we're talking about the area around the National Palace of Culture, or the NDK as it's known locally. It opened in 1981. It is a huge complex that was built to celebrate Bulgaria's 1300th anniversary. Think about that, U.S. listeners. Bulgaria's first state was actually established 1,100 years before the U.S. in 681 A.D. It's a massive cultural and convention center surrounded by expansive parks, sunken plazas, and, of course, thanks to the Soviets, brutalist monuments.
It's funny you say brutalist architecture because I just seen a post on that, I think, on Instagram. And some of the buildings are just fantastical, like sci-fi stuff, but there is a rawness to it. And what defines a brutalist architecture, primarily, I think, from the 50s to the 70s, a lot of raw concrete.
Yes.
And just imposing monolithic forms.
It's not my favorite. As a former student of architecture, right. It's not my favorite.
But that's kind of my point, though. There is some beauty in it. And yeah. I think
there's some buildings that are pretty cool.
Béton brut, but the natural concrete unfinished quality of it, but just that it's creative. It's not just a rectangle.
That's true.
Toil away in some office. There's some thought to it. And it may not be completely pretty in a sense, but there's a combination. And I think that's what tonight's story involves, in that you have this architecture and a playground. It's meant for kids. Come on. It's supposed to be nice, but there's a bit of rawness to it. But it all has a distinct memory for the writer here.
That's right.
And like I said, places like that, you know, they're built on grand scales for the masses. And then, you know, when there aren't any people, they have that heavy presence of their own. And they will echo the political regimes of the past who initiated them. And the concrete, you know, it weathers, fountains go dry, and they get filled with Eastern European cigarette butts. These once glorious public works. There's a melancholy, too, but also a fond nostalgia, I would say.
Now,
that's what this story exudes here. And so, these modern ruins that contain perhaps the echoes of the people who used to gather there, and maybe a little bit of a stone concrete tape theory, whatever.
Oh, there we go. There we go. Manufactured for stone tape. Well, it makes a perfect setting for tonight's story. When you have a massive urban park built on top of ancient ruins, you got to wonder about all the emotions, history, and lives of the people that were there before you. It can be architecturally complex. You might turn a corner in a modern concrete plaza and find yourself completely isolated from the bustling metropolis just a few hundred feet away. It's easy to get lost, not just geographically, but also maybe experientially.
Right. And then the other aspect I liked about this story is that it's returning to places we visited in our youth and may have fond memories of, or even traumatic ones.
Yes.
I've been thinking about that quite a bit, mostly with media, though, as I've been pestering Scott with, is like the beauty of YouTube is like watching, you know, either a movie or often it'll be like a skit or a sketch or a character or a cartoon interlude that was from Sesame Street.
Yes.
And it's like the parrot
you get
was
that
like
sense that, memory.
The plumber, I've come to fix the sink. And the parrot just mimicking me until he exasperates, but it expires. My point being is that, or the Friendly Giant, which is a French, I think French Canadian animation. And it's like, wow, you see them again. It's like, I haven't seen that since I was like seven.
Yeah.
Maybe six or, you know, and then the thing that's, I like about it, unless it's all some kind of big Mandela effect, which may be going on here, is that that is exactly the way I saw it when I was 7 years old.
Right.
That hasn't changed, or it shouldn't have.
Yeah.
What are my memories of that and how those changed and faded over time and then are instantly refreshed? I'm not guessing about it. I'm not having a friend tell me what it was like. That's exactly how it appeared. And just it's like, wow, I don't remember that. And then something you do remember exactly. But
What gets me in that category just quickly? And it's for people of a certain age, which is going to be very few people listening are going to maybe be old enough to remember this. But you remember the documentary, which may have been on Sesame Street, but I don't know where it was. It was a short documentary about how milk was made.
Oh, of course.
The trucks.
Milk, milk,
milk, milk, milk. That's just like, those are all the lyrics, folks. But when
weird.
It came on, like I saw it like 2 years ago and I was like, oh my God, I thought my head was going to explode because I completely forgot it existed.
Well, that's what I'm saying is that, and how you feel about it at the time may be totally different now. Now it's kind of creepy.
It is. It's very creepy. Right. It feels creepy.
So anyway, getting back to the story, it's like we have these experiences as kids and they're so impactful because they were funny. They felt like a safe space. Or even if they were a little scary, they made a huge impact. And then years later, you come back to them as like, is that exactly the way they were?
Yeah.
And when you're talking about like a spot in a city, like a playground, you know, cities are living, breathing things because of the people that inhabit them, of course, partially here. And they change because people change them. And boy, LA is one of those things where I didn't drive down a street for 6 months. I come back and there's a Target there now. Like, where did that come from? It's so fluid, it gives people the heebie-jeebies in a way. But when you and I were in Denver, if you remember, for a podcast movement convention, and we went to your old childhood home, right? And I think there was just an old empty lot there. So yeah, same thing. Like you were like, I think this is it. And you know, those recollections. And I took a bunch of photos. It's like, look, I have no context for this, but I understood
that. Sure. I knew it was it. And it felt weird to be there. And it was still a lot,
right.
But it was empty. Yeah.
But there's some, there, I saw it in your face. There's some connection there. And you have it as a human being to a spot that humans built. But there's also, it's like the environment remembers us in a way. The environment itself holds its breath for just a moment so we can step back into a memory.
Yeah, that's very well said. Well, in that feeling of stepping back into a space that shouldn't exist quite the way you remember it is exactly what we're exploring tonight. Forrest, whenever you're ready, why don't you take us into Vili's dead letter about the elephant slides of Sophia.
When I was a child, I had a favorite playground. I called it the Elephant Slides Playground. It was located in the middle of the city of Sofia, Bulgaria, right next to the Palace of Culture. This was a very imposing place back in the day, with the singing water fountains, the monuments, and of course the palace itself. But I really liked it because of the elephant slides. I remember that the playground was right next to the fountains, that there was a flight of stairs, the main building is on a small hill, and that despite being in the heart of the city, it felt very calm, remote, and a little bit melancholic. It was surrounded by high walls. There was a little alpinarium on one side, a beautiful mosaic on the other. And let's not forget the slides. They were made of white marble, smooth and sparkling, and resembled elephant trunks. This is why, in my head to this day, they are the elephant slides. And here is where the weird starts. After growing up and roaming the city by myself, I was never able to find them again. Ever. I remember spending an entire day walking around the downtown area, searching for them. Searching for this playground, surrounded by red brick walls, and it stayed hidden from me. I asked my mom about them, and she couldn't remember ever taking me to a place like that. I started blaming my age and fading childhood memories. Until last year. I haven't visited the country in a decade, but a couple of happy occasions, and a very happy coincidence, brought me back in late spring. I spent one whole day reconnecting with an old friend, and at some point, this playground came up. My friend was convinced she knew the one and said she could bring me there right away. A few hours later, we gave up. At this point, it seemed that this place was only in my imagination. The next day was rainy, chilly, and gloomy. I planned to spend it with my sister before heading out to another town for the weekend. While waiting for my sister, I just chilled downtown with not much to do. And then I spotted it. It was right there. I couldn't believe that just the day before I was looking and it stayed hidden and now it's right there. Of course, I took the stairs. As I was going down, the sky started to clear and the sun came out. It became warm and sunny, but it didn't feel quite like spring. It felt more like late summer or early autumn, with that golden quality to the light that comes with the harvest. But the playground was there. There wasn't a single soul around. The mosaic on the south wall was shining in all its glory. The waterfall on the north side was bubbling quietly. And the elephant slides were just as white and sparkly as I remembered them. I sat down on a bench, took out a book, and spent the next hour or so just enjoying the day. Right then, my phone rang. My sister was finally coming and was looking for me. I put my book back into my bag and went up the stairs. As I was climbing them, the clouds surrounded the sun again. It felt chilly and damp, but I didn't give it much thought just yet. I was content to have had this moment at last. At the end of the day, I tried to find it once more. I didn't have much time left in the city and wanted to take some pictures before heading out. And this time, I did find it. It was still there. But also, not exactly. The mosaic on the south wall was all cracked and weathered. The sun face was almost unrecognizable. The waterfall garden was full of cigarette butts and looked like it hadn't seen falling water in a long time. And the white marble of the slides was covered in graffiti, some of it quite lewd. I didn't even bother taking my phone out. So that hour that I spent there in the morning,
I am convinced that I slipped in a time pocket because, try as I might, I can't find any other reasonable explanation. I am just glad that I had the opportunity to experience the serenity of that little park once again. Something strange is going on in Blanket Fortiana tonight. We'll return in a moment. Back to exploring the unexplained.
Okay, there's a lot of things about this that are really interesting. And, you know, not being familiar with Sofia or Bulgaria at all, I, you know, had to do some virtual tourism on Google Earth to try and figure out exactly where this was. I found the NDK, the Palace of Culture. It's an amazing looking structure, lots of fountains. There are playgrounds there. And I was like, well, how can I find, I'm searching around for slides shaped like elephants or elephant slides. And I did find some. I found some parks in the city or around the city. There's a couple of web pages all about the playgrounds in Sofia, which was really cool. And there were elephant slides at some of these parks, not very many of them. I think I only found two that had them. And I was wondering, well, is one of these the one from the story? I'm not really sure. None of them that I could see from either photos or Google Street View, because there was some walk around camera footage at one of them, which was very cool. None of them had the mural that Philly was talking about. But this idea of like, okay, I'm going back, why can't I remember this? And it's almost like a mystical memory for Philly. And then when she gets there, it's like, I can't find it. And then going back to find it and then coming across it when it's in this very pristine state that matches her childhood. That's the really fascinating part about it. And then also I thought it was interesting how the mom just couldn't remember anything about the place. But as a parent who's taking a kid to a playground, you're so up in your head about like, how do I keep this creature alive another 24 hours?
Oh, geez. That's, already it's changed from your childhood's generation, remember? And I know it's an ongoing eye roll for the younger folks, but like, you know, in our day, it was the go out and play, get out of the house, stop watching TV, just get on your bike and go somewhere and come back at dinner time and wash up.
Yeah. No. We did that. I did that too. I'm just saying that when I think of playgrounds, I think of they're way too young to go off by themselves.
Oh, well, yeah.
In my mind, this thing is.
Also, it's LA, so it's a different kind of thing. Did you want to say something about Denver, though? You had some other thoughts?
I don't know. Just, yeah, the going back to where that house was and then having it be torn down, which it should have been because it was a crap shack back in the 1970s. Yeah. Like, I didn't expect to find it.
Right.
I actually honestly expected to find some building that just swallowed up the lot. It was actually a little more sobering to find the empty lot.
Oh, you know what? We did find, because this is part of your childhood narrative of lore, is there was an Arby's right next door.
Yeah, it was behind an Arby's. It was literally a house behind an Arby's, which was a family joke for a long time.
Right.
So, yeah.
But it wasn't funny
when we were doing it, but when it was not the best house. We were pretty broke. We a guy tried to break in one night. All that stuff. And now the Arby's is weirdly still there, although it's been updated.
That's right.
And there's a big giant parking deck because there's a light rail system that stops right next to where it was. It used to just be normal train tracks. So I would see normal trains rolling through daily.
Yeah.
But now that's a light rail system. So that was another part of how I knew I was in the right spot. But with the other thing that was weird about it, and I think about it in this story, it has a lot of parallels with it, was that I wasn't quite sure where it was. And we rode around looking for it in the car because we had some time. And again, this is in Denver, Colorado, folks, where I lived from the time I was 2 until I was 9 or so. And we were giving up and heading downtown to go to a bar or something. And we went by almost magically. I was like, wait, this is it. And it was completely not in the spot that I thought it had been. It matches this story almost perfectly, honestly. And then I was like, no, this is it for sure.
Right.
And of course, I showed pictures to my mom who, passed away towards the end of last year. Yeah. But she didn't recognize it at all. But to be fair, she was in cognitive decline. So I can't say for sure that that was part of that. Yeah.
What's funny is that in many ways, of course, they become the unreliable narrator of your past memories and stories and things that happen. And then there are details, that's just the way aging happens, especially towards the end, where it's like they remember exactly how something went. And I know they're correct because I was there. And so they'll know all the details of some little anecdote. My great-grandmother was like that. Like, she couldn't tell you, if it was Tuesday or Friday, but she would just say, like, you know, when I was 3, they came by covered wagon. seriously, from Virginia to Wisconsin and westward. And the wagon rolled over her ankle, broke her leg, you know, when she was three. And she remembers that clearly. She told all the details.
Yeah,
and then again, and then then couldn't remember if we had already eaten dinner. So that's just the way that goes.
Yeah.
But like to your point about her remembering, there's same thing with you. It's like there are certain feelings that get imprinted, but is this the exact place? Then you throw in other elements. Like I think you were going to talk about some Bulgarian folklore of the region. Is there some other supernatural element that's at play here?
You know, like we were saying in the cold open, Bulgaria is, you know, at this point, 1400 years old there. And before, when I was looking at when the first state of Bulgaria was founded in 681, the prior people in charge were the Romans. So that was the old neighbors. So when you think about the stuff that's there and under the ground and what was going on, it is very strange, but in the local folklore, there's these woodland spirits called, and forgive me, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, Samodivi or Samodivi, S-A-M-O-D-I-V-I. Mm-hmm. And these are ethereal spirits that inhabit wild places, but also sometimes forgotten corners of human settlements. And supposedly, if you step into their territory, it can cause missing time.
Mm-hmm.
Or allow people who are in there to experience time in a different way. Now, generally, encountering them is more out in the wild, but I thought it was interesting, this category of being in a settlement, like a place that used to be populated, and maybe it's a hidden corner of that place, which maybe that coincides with what's going on here. In the playgrounds that I found in around the culture center, I couldn't find one right at it with elephant slides, but they could be gone now too. The ones I found were, one of them was a mile away, and then there was another one roughly the same distance, but in a different area that had, and that one looked kind of run down, mm-hmm. like Vili was describing. Then the other one looked very nice and pristine, but neither one of those two had fountains like she was talking about, or a mural that I could see, but I only had a few Google Earth pictures to try and figure that out.
Right.
But I think it's really interesting how she was saying she sat down and she had this almost mystical experience where it went right back to what it was like when she was there as a kid. And that to me was super fascinating because, you know, a lot of times when you talk about screen memories and UFOs and things like this on other Dead Letter episodes or Astonishing Legends, one of the things that seems to be coming to the forefront a lot more these days conversationally and in terms of how the world works and our reality works and perception is this idea that we're somehow controlling it, or the things we're encountering are controlling our perception on their behalf.
Right.
But in this case, there may be some idea where when she got to that place and she was undisturbed in that moment, that her own mind filled in the gaps and it was hard to distinguish that from reality. It became a manifested reality, that past that she remembered as a child. So. We also had talked about, you know, back in January of 2024, we did our series on the Ghosts of Versailles, on the infamous Versailles time slip, which is another interesting aspect to this story, where these women were touring the palace at Versailles and they were taken back in time to a older period and ran into all kinds of people and interacted with them and everything. It's a really fascinating story. If you want to hear that, look up Versailles in our back catalog. The other idea is this, did she get sucked into some kind of time slip, which she herself suggested towards the end of the story? Did I get rerouted into a different reality for a moment? Because as she said, the mosaic on the south wall was shining in all its glory. The waterfall was bubbling quietly, and the elephant slides were just as white and sparkly as I remembered. So I thought that was really fascinating. So then you get to this point where it's like, are you out of time, or did you go to a strange place? And if you did, are the people from that time now seeing you and thinking they're seeing a ghost?
You wonder about perception. We had just spoken about this on a couple of past DLOs, maybe the last one, where you do wonder about that kind of perception from the other side. And sometimes you get clues. I don't think there are axioms that hold fast for every situation, but I remember, what was it, the two guys, I can't remember if they're Grant, you know, from Ghost, from one of the Ghost shows, but they were in a storied old haunted hotel, classic setup. You know, the hotel was built by the husband, you know, the wealthy building husband of woman who's had a connection to royalty of herself, but she stayed in the hotel a lot, loved it there. It was kind of her thing. And they go to get an EVP in one of the rooms where she's frequented. And it's fairly clear, but you can hear them, you know, asking her questions. And then what they got back was from the ghost, presumably the woman, was, "I can hear you. Where are you? I can't see you." So the ghost could not see them, but she could hear other people. So it's, that's fascinating to me. It's like, because we obviously, you know, assume if we believe that, that the ghost, they're kind of omniscient in a way, they can see everything, but maybe not all the time. They're stuck in another plane of existence. And so what we have here with this story, because I was thinking about this, we often go to the old chestnut of time slips. And I think sometimes it happens where you're missing time, or sometimes maybe you're ahead in time or somehow into the future.
Right.
More so, it seems like people have more stories about traveling to the past. Is it because of choice and free will, and that the future has not been yet determined, although there's a likelihood of how people are going to behave? So there is a probability that that's going to, there's a future that you could step into that has not happened yet. But we've talked about this in the past, Bold Street in Liverpool in England, where several people have claimed to have experienced time slips where they just step a few feet down the same block and suddenly all the shops have fashion from the 60s, like cool Britannia fashions. And all the people look older and just, you know, from that period, it's like they stepped into the early 60s. Vintage cars, like I said, just the area near St. Luke's Church is significant and then and how different it looks. So that's perhaps different where you've stepped into another time. Here, I wonder about this other concept, which is likely connected to what we think about as the possibility and theories of time slips, but parallel dimensions. Have you then gone into or crossed an invisible veil line where now you're in a parallel dimension where it's the same place, but things are slightly different?
Right.
It's newer. There's no graffiti. It hasn't been trampled on. The other thing that's interesting about the story is the absence of people. The other instance, like I said, in Bold Street in Liverpool, they do see other people, and it's not a different place. It's the same place at a different time. So Nothing strange. You know, I do wonder, again, we talked about this in Paul Gledhill's Anomaly podcast, Christmas Roundtable with Jim Harrell, because he's got some great campfire stories of the ones that I always remember about time slips. We had just talked about in the past DLO about a guy walking into the theater to watch Hellboy and suddenly the movie's over. Now, he's not in a different place. He's not in, you know, it's not like 1970s Cinemark theaters where like, oh, now there's one screen and just the parking lot and like, what's a multiplex? It's not that.
Right, right.
He's just lost maybe an hour and a half.
Right.
It just disappeared somehow. You know, where did that go? Where is the other people? And so that's not all that different. There's a time shift. And what we were talking about is a fascinating concept is when somebody has this experience. And so one of Jim Harrell's campfire stories that I always liked is the people on a road trip, this couple, and they see this 1950s style, retro style diner. They go in. The husband's like, oh my God, these cars are all pristine. They're so cherry. Like they're just like they're brand new from the late 50s.
Right. And
like this place really does it up right. And they go in there and everybody's in character. You know, like the only equivalent we had, which I talked about, is the chain. It was kind of a mild chain. I think it started in Chicago, but Ed DeBevick's.
Oh, yes.
I remember that.
Yeah,
they're all struggling actors who had a side gig being a wait staff, who had had characters. And there's Peggy Sue with the poodle skirt, and she was your waitress, and then the greaser guy, you know, and so they all had these characters, and like that's a fun play acting of a different time. These folks go into this diner and everything is just as it was, you know, maybe in the late 60s, early 60s. And what I'm fascinated with is like, okay, that's weird. And like everybody's kind of polite, but they don't say much. In the other story where the woman and her friend, after going to a concert, I think, stop off at the Roadhouse. And that's the time slip at the Roadhouse. And they go in there and there are people in there And they learn later that there weren't supposed to be any people in there. It was closed, yet it was fully functional. There's folks in there. And I take clues of this if the story is relayed accurately that, you know, her friend are in there. They just order a beer. They look to people around them. You know, people are kind of chattering, but they turn to some other people sitting at the bar like, hey, how you doing tonight? You know, you guys are around here? And the people smile at them and they kind of nod, but they don't say anything. There's not much interaction. Like, maybe they're not supposed to. I don't know what the other people are seeing. You know what I'm saying? It's not like these people from the future suddenly popped into or you know, this ghost diner.
Yeah.
Anyway, look that up. It's a great episode. It's been featured Jim Harold's books, but it has a real Rod Serling Night Gallery twist to it. But this diner from the 50s, it's like they order, you know, the guys, I think they said, well, he seemed polite, but real businesslike, not that friendly. Maybe didn't say much or maybe said nothing at all. And they order food and they eat the food. And it was pretty good. And then they get in the car, of course. And as the story goes, they come back like, hey, you know, we're coming back this way at another time. Let's stop by that diner. They go there and the place is deserted. There's never been a diner there, or maybe there was, but it's been 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
My point is like they ate food from another place in time and space time. Like they had patty melts and, you know, chicken fried steak from somewhere else, but it was real food. It didn't taste weird or like Jeff Goldblum's steak in The Fly or that Gina Davis eats. And she's like, there's something just off about it. It's that uncanny valley. Like, it's not quite right. I think what's not quite right about these and like our story tonight is that there's no people, something seem off, and you have a physical reaction. Like I said, the clouds parted. Suddenly you're in different weather. The vibe is different. You stepped into perhaps another alternate parallel universe, reality.
Or one of your own making. That's the question.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So is this something that, is it like a hiccup and you've manifested this other, for a time being, this other reality, but within the same background or framework? You know, it's kind of like animation cells. You just laid over the acetate of something else, but it's the same painted background.
Yeah.
And you peel that, you walk up the stairs, that peels off, and now you're back to the other one. And it's not quite exactly where you remember it, but it's a physical place. It's not a made up fairyland. Because the other thing about fairies is something like that, where you're being put over, there's a trickster element, and you're having some other false reality shown to you to divert you from what's actually there, which is their home, and they want you out of there. But this is the nice one where they don't abscond with you. There's another campfire story about this couple. I think it's like rental colleges and they're on holiday and they go for a night walk, and in the shrubbery next to it, there's all these pinpoints of beautiful light, like little twinkling Christmas tree lights, like little LEDs. And they're kind of twinkling and they're all over and they get really enthralled with this. And they're like, oh my God, this is beautiful. Like, what's going on here? What is this? Are these bugs? And they start following it. And then they realize it's leading us somewhere we're not even really thinking about. We're just blindly kind of following the pattern twinkling lights. And then they got kind of a bad feeling of like, we should stop trying to find the source of this. This is not good.
Yeah.
It's intentionally leading us away from somewhere where the outcome's
like
not good.
Like a Pukwudgie.
Yeah. It's something, it was not good. It was beautiful to look at. It was enthralling. Enchanté. It was enchanting. But ultimately their gut told them like, no, go back. This is not good.
I had to look up. Did you know what an alpinarium was that was mentioned?
I did. I looked it up again just to reconfirm, but
I did not know. And I guess, you know, it's like a rock garden or something. And one of the things that's interesting that it suggested too was that the alpinarium in Sofia is in the shadow of a huge, amazing mountain called Vitosha that is just gorgeous. Mm. And again, I'm saying from pictures, but there's lots of like boulders and forestry. And this would be the kind of place that you would find the Samodivi, the woodland spirits. And it also makes sense why there's the alpinarium in the park. It may be a nod to Vitosha, which is outside of town.
Yeah.
All of which is to say the mountain, the area, it's all very beautiful and spiritual and interesting. It has so much history, so many different governments and control and different cultures living there. And all of that is melded down into this one, what seems like a really amazing experience.
Yeah.
And, It seemed like it would have been an amazing place to live, and clearly it was for Villy when she was a child. But the one thing that I did want to say was that the elephant slides that I saw the pictures of are very evocative. They're graphically interesting. They seem like the most fun. As an adult, I wanted to go slide down one, because that slide is the trunk. The trunk is, in the cases of most of the ones we found, except for one, I did find a website that was all about playgrounds, and it showed an elephant slide in Germany. And that one was different, but this, the ones
of course,
in,
it's German, where they,
yeah,
it's even German. The toilets have to be different, where the hole is in the front of the toilet seat, not in the back, where it would make more sense. But that's
different. But these ones where it's the trunk, they have a very cool look to them architecturally and design-wise. I'd actually like to know more history about that, because it must have been based on somebody's initial design, or maybe an artist or something, that's very evocative and cool and like pleasant to look at. So I can see why it would make an impression on a child coming to this playground. And, you know, playgrounds are supposed to be filled with all these things that will get you to play and stimulate your mind and everything. And these, I think, did that in spades, so much so that Villy was hell-bent on finding them.
Yeah.
When they came back to Sophia. Do you have any other thoughts?
Just in closing here, one, I'm glad that Villy had this once in a lifetime experience that made such an impact in a good way. You know what I'm saying? Where is it like I was now thrust into a concrete Soviet hell where I could not escape. You know, it's nothing. Yeah, it wasn't bleak, thank goodness. And or Kafka-esque. That'd be my thing, where it's just I am saddled and saturated with irony that I cannot escape, which is my life now. But the, you know, the fact that she was able to experience this, and it was pleasant and evocative and also mysterious. And I wish, that's always been my wish, as I've said on the show, I wish most all of us could experience a little bit of this kind of magic and mystery more often in our lives, because I believe life is magical. It's full of these things that are unexplainable. Sometimes they're not good. Yeah, I don't wish that on anybody, but like I was just saying, but I'm glad that she was able to have this experience, and it just makes you wonder. You don't have to have any answers. You can just leave at this, where you had the strange thing. You'll always remember it. And it ties into early childhood memories, which are pleasant. As far as the elephants go, I always think about this, because you were showing me all these playgrounds. It's like, like the elephant shape makes sense. You got the trunk. Okay. The trunk is, get it.
It's slide down the trunk.
Yeah. You walk on the back, the trunk's the slide. Maybe in Germany or France, it goes backwards. Like no knock against anything, any French design, but my friend who is very much into autos, not you, but he just always had the saying that the French copy no one, and no one copies the French. So they have a different way of doing it, but
Citroën.
There's a commonality to these slides. And, you know, maybe there's a mistake about which exact park there was, and you're misremembering it. And that's why these other folks, like the mother, other friends, could not find the exact one, or one said, I know exactly where that is. Let me take you there.
Yeah.
And I could see how people trying to put a, you know, mundane or rational explanation, all this is just a feeling, is saying like, you went to another one, you just mistook the first one, or the other one was torn down or modified, and so it wasn't the same, and that's all it was. There's nothing mystical about this. I see that you take the one thing that happened and have an explanation for it, but it doesn't explain everything else that was experienced. So here, the feeling, the weather, the whole vibe of the thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Collectively, the gestalt of that is what the experience is, not just, is this the exact spot of the playground?
That's right.
Is this fountain the same? Is it, you know, is the graffiti or the mural really there? You're misremembering that. It's a whole experience, and that's what's important. And like I said, you don't have to prove anything, but we've talked about this before, is that that's the mystery you want to solve, and you want to find out exactly what's going on. But I think the point was, even if there's the fae or this and that are leading you to this, is the point of the whole experience is that it is mystical in a way. And it's a cherished moment. So, but yeah, I'd want to know all those details, but like you may not find that out, but I'm glad that the experience remains so cherished and magical. And I wish I had one of my own.
Well, Villy, thank you so much for taking us back to Sophia with you. There's a profound comfort in the idea that the places we loved as children might still exist in some protected pocket of reality waiting for us to need or visit them again. Today's world can be loud, messy, and deteriorating, but for one golden hour, you were granted a reprieve. whether it was a localized shift in space-time, a trick of the city's architecture, or something else, it's a gift that, as Forrest basically said, belongs entirely to you. We should all be so lucky to find our own quiet corner of our childhood like you managed to do. Thank you for sending your letter into the Astonishing Dead Letter Office.
The Astonishing Dead Letter Office is hosted by Scott Philbrick and Faris Burgess and is executive produced by Tess Feifel. The show is edited and mixed by Sarah Voorhees-Wendell at VW Sound. The theme is based on the Astonishing Legends theme by Judson Crane at Founder Music, arranged by Alan Carissia, who composes all the other music in the show. Tommy Beaver Design created the logo. The announcer is John Bolton. That's me. Stories are lightly edited for length, content, and readability, but otherwise presented as they're sent to us. We're always looking for more dead letters, so if you have a story of your own you'd like to share, email it to deadletteroffice@astonishinglegends.com. Please include how you would like to be credited. First name only, first name last initial, anonymous, a pseudonym. Let us know. Due to the number of emails coming in, we often cannot respond, but we do read them all. No part of this show may be reproduced anywhere without permission. Copyright Astonishing Legends Productions.